Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins. Afternoons on The Score.
You buying George and Tim Grover and Michael Jordan's story that it was bad pizza?
And the pizza came, there was four or five guys outside the door.
Five guys delivering one pizza.
Something makes me giggle just hearing him talk about pizza, though.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
Eat the pizza.
He was talking about it like it was a conquest, like over Gary Payton.
I had no problem with the pizza. I had a lot of pizza on my mind.
What self-respecting room full of guys lets one guy eat an entire pizza?
A pizza.
Well, I'm making dinner.
Oh, okay. I'll just put it in the fridge. It's even better the next day. Huh?
That's what I'm saying. No one else has any pizza. It's a full pizza the night before an NBA Finals game.
Let me know when you're going to be at the Howard Street Inn again. And we'll maybe I'll come by and we'll chew on a pizza or something.
It's on me.
Huh?
Robert Chief didn't have any. Luke, Ron Hopper, myself.
So he spat on the pizza so that nobody else could eat it.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
You spit on the pizza?
She used to spit on her own floor. That never made any sense to me.
What is he doing?
Did anyone order me a plain cheese?
Well, yeah, we did. But if you want any, somebody's going to have to barf it all up. Because it's gone.
Pizza story has layers.
That's right. Call it a stuffed pizza.
They're baked in.
I didn't like either of those jokes.
You make this pizza?
This pie was found at a crime scene.
My pizza never hurt nobody.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody will eat. Eat the pizza.
Can you leave some for us?
Lay off me, I'm starving.
Yo, saddle up, lock and load.
The McNeil and Parkins Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Still think I'm going to get pizza tonight, Mac.
Patrick has voted. We are getting pizza at my house. I'm sorry, we're getting the pizza at my house.
Right.
Damn it, I've already broken my new resolution. Always
That's
say the
least
the
shocking
pizza.
Thing ever.
I'm not getting pizza, I'm getting the pizza. He wants to order the orange cheese pizza, as he calls it. And like me, like Jeremy Roenick, like Jane Lynch, we are Aurelio's people in my house. It's the sauce. Tell them Joe sent you.
Sauce.
I've been an Aurelio's fan since my maiden voyage in 1977. And I think just like most of us, it's a pizza we grew up with. The pizza we grew up with. Not pizza. The pizza we grew up with. That we hold in such high esteem. And we learned today Jordan's Pizza in Salt Lake City was a Pizza Hut large, thin and crispy with extra pepperoni. That's a good choice by him.
That was allegedly not tampered with, nor were there five people delivering it to his room. So,
yeah, just two.
Just two. But, I mean, the case continues. The mystery continues because
so
that
many
Pizza
lies.
Hut employee.
We've been told so many lies throughout this this 10-piece documentary. There's someone's not telling. Tim Grover is lying about the pizza, or the pizza man is telling a story that's not based in fact. Reinsdorf and Jordan. Now Reinsdorf's coming back with Casey Johnson saying he's upset with Mike and doesn't remember the conversations they had accurately. didn't represent them. We've been told a bunch of lies.
Well, it's honestly, it is frustrating because, not just because like we have nothing else to talk about in the world of sports, so we just take 25 plus year grudges, or 22 years in the case of the ultimate breakup of that team. But you know, the handshake with the Pistons and like every little thing, like, oh man, they were going after Tim Floyd in 96, and just all the little things that we found out. It's crazy. There's like one side, the other side, and then the truth. And they did a 10 part pseudo documentary on it, and we still don't know the truth. Like this quote from Jerry Reinsdorf to Casey Johnson about the scene where Jordan said he had never heard Reinsdorf's explanation for breaking up the team and that he thinks they all would have signed one-year deals to go for it in 98-99. Reinsdorf says he was not pleased with the scene. He says he, being Michael, he knew better. Michael and I had some private conversations at that time that I won't go into detail on ever, but there's no question in my mind that Michael's feeling at the time was we could not put together a championship team the next year. I asked Phil to come back. Phil said no. Michael said, I won't play for anybody other than Phil. I met with Michael on the 3rd of July of that year, and I said to him, we're in a lockout. Who knows when we're going to play? Why don't we wait until the lockout is over, and maybe I can talk Phil into coming back? And he agreed. When the lockout was over, I still couldn't talk Phil into coming back. And the big thing is, Michael had cut his finger with a cigar cutter, and he couldn't have played. So what's all this talk about bringing everybody back when Michael couldn't have come back? End quote. It honestly makes me more frustrated. Like, I feel like I need an 11th episode. I got to get Scotty in the room. Why don't you regret 1.8 seconds? Did you mean that? I got to get Michael in the room. Do you really think Scotty was signing for less? I got to ask Scotty if he was ever possibly going to consider signing for less. And I got to ask Jerry why he empowered Jerry Krause to make all of those comments, and if he actually has regrets of not bringing Michael Jordan back to play basketball. It's insane.
Ton of blanks to be filled in. There's no doubt about it. Jordan left us at the end of episode number 7 with our jaws, gaping and saying, what? He's having an emotional moment, and he wants to stop the interview because he's talking emotionally about how he was perceived by his teammates and wondering aloud whether he's, you know, loved or not. And I like to know from Pippen, who in Jordan's poem today was revealed. Jordan told him in Utah that he'll be remembered more than anything by the 1.8 seconds. If it was ever important for Scottie Pippen, if he cares what this city thinks of him. Because while I thought he redeemed himself at the back end of The Last Dance, I think it was episode 10, where he actually called Jerry Krause a great general manager, the documentary as a whole did him no favors. It didn't show a lot of good video on what made him a great basketball player. They talked about him as a member of Jordan's supporting cast, as though he were a Luke Longley or a Bill Cartwright or somebody of that ilk. Scottie Pippen's one of the 50 greatest players in the game's history. That documentary didn't let us know that, and I'd love to find out if Pippen, if it's important to him, what this city thinks of him. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't matter. And Jordan probably knew that was a tough putt to get him to come back to go for that 7th title, and Phil was an impossibility. I've also been left wanting more on Reinsdorf didn't try to facilitate a better relationship between Krause and Jackson. Everyone just says, well, that can't be done. Yes, it can. It can. You can get guys who don't like each other to work together if you work at it. If both parties are willing to work, and you know what? Maybe you make them work together. Why does it have to be one or the other? Jerry could have been a much better leader. Jerry Reinsdorf's tenure as owner of the Bulls should be a lot more celebrated with those 6 championship banners that hang from the rafters in the United Center than they are. And most of it is a result of The Last Dance and why they broke it up. And it's unfortunate because, like we've stated, there were basketball reasons to break it up.
Yeah, and you know, we had Antoine Walker on earlier, and he was awesome. And he was telling a ton of Jordan stories from when he was attempting the second comeback and when Antoine Walker was arranging the pickup games in Chicago with Juwan Howard and Penny Hardaway and Mike Finley and a 16-year-old LeBron James. And the details of it were incredible. People should listen to the 3 o'clock hour podcast. But at the end, we asked him about the present-day Bulls, and he talked about their reputation with star players is just not good. It's just it's just not regarded as a positive one. And he referenced Derrick Rose, but Jimmy Butler could have just as easily been referenced. It didn't end well with Luol Deng. It didn't end particularly well with Joakim Noah, though he has said mostly positive things about the organization since he left. So there's plenty of high-profile examples there. Obviously, it didn't go well with Dwayne Wade. But I was thinking about this documentary. All of these present-day guys are watching. And on one hand, the Bulls are cool, right? They're wearing Jordans, these guys today. They're still influenced by him. The Bulls are this international brand. That seems cool. But then on the flip side, it's like, good Lord, Michael Jordan didn't have a good relationship with management. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Phil Jackson, these guys that no one in the present-day Bulls orbit or really in the present-day NBA orbit could ever hope or pray to be. And it's like, well, why would I go to Chicago? If it ended poorly for Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, why would it end well for me?
Yeah, Jackson, I'm sorry, Krause, Reinsdorf. Jerry Reinsdorf has made some bad decisions on hires of prickly people. And he pulled the plug on one White Sox general manager who didn't have, in Jerry's mind anyway, I was told from people on the inside, a lot of people skills, and that was Larry Himes, who later was hired by the Cubs to do the same job, more successful as a White Sox GM than a Cubs. But you look at guys, and he had Al Goldust on his scouting staff, but when you draft number ones in succession, Thomas, Fernandez, McDowell, and Ventura. I don't know, that's not the right order, but those are four back-to-back number ones, a couple of Hall of Famers in there. Some really good talent in there. And you part company with him, yet you allowed this Jerry Krause, this toxic man, to be in your building and have such a high-profile job for as long as he did before he removed him from power, and ultimately Paxson wound up developing some of the same characteristics of Jerry Krause, very preoccupied by things that are being written about him in suburban publications of 75,000. Yeah. You know, why is it that, and I'm trying to be fair to Reinsdorf and the Bulls and the Sox, but it seems like there is, because there have been bitter endings to the ends of Bears careers and Blackhawks careers as well. But not to the same extent as it is with the Bulls and the White Sox. I mean, the highest level of performers, Jordan, Frank Thomas, these are guys who left pissed.
Yeah.
And, you know, at some point, you have to say there's something wrong way up on top. And it's an atmosphere that is not conducive to a happy workplace.
Well, and listen, you've also said, is it possible for Jordan to be happy? And it might just be he was never going to, unless he got his way with everything, he was never going to be happy. And it was talked about, like, he wanted some trades that would have been awful, and Krause made them, and they were better, right? Oakley for Cartwright is probably the most famous example. Because I will be honest with you, on the issue of 98-99 and the breaking up of that team, I actually believe the Krause-Reinsdorf narrative more than the Jordan narrative simply because of Scottie Pippen. It defies logic that Scottie Pippen would have taken a one-year deal in order to come back to the Bulls when he was 34, yeah, coming off of multiple surgeries, when he had been underpaid for that long and hated Jerry Krause as much as he did and had won that much. It doesn't – forget Luke Longley. You could replace him. Forget Buschler and Kerr. You could find someone else who could hit threes. Yeah, absolutely. If you got Jordan back, you would have been competitive. I'm not saying you wouldn't have been. But the idea that you were getting Scottie Pippen to sign a one-year deal at 34 years old, it's just – it's nonsensical.
Jordan's just flat out wrong there.
Correct. He's just wrong.
Or delusional. Maybe he has that high of opinion of what it means to be one of his supporting cast members. He had to know Scotty was gonna want to be paid somewhere else.
If Michael would have cut him a $10 million check on the side, you know, like, you know, if he
still would have been underpaid.
He absolutely would have still been underpaid. But like, if if you would have done something nefarious, right, if there would have been something like, hey, if Michael's going to come back and play, instead of making $30 million for 1 year, he's going to make $5 million because he's got a deal with Jerry Reinsdorf that he's going to cut him in for equity on the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you would have had some seriously creative accounting, maybe it's a different story. But under the cap, based on what Pippen had been paid, based on Pippen's relationship with Krause, given that Krause wanted to trade him multiple times and his health, he was not coming back. And Phil wasn't coming back. Like, Phil was a free agent, and Phil was 1 year away from starting his next dynasty in L.A., right? I mean, like, mm-hmm. Phil knew. He wasn't dumb. He got rid of old Michael Jordan and old Scotty and old Dennis Rodman, and he started coaching prime Shaq and young Kobe. Not a bad gig.
Yeah, really isn't. And I want to say again what I said up top when we got to discussing this. I don't believe there's a right or wrong on whether you keep swinging with a great player or you decide, okay, it's time to retool and I'm going to bust this up. As emotionally difficult as that is for people to swallow, it doesn't mean it's wrong. And while the Bulls didn't win anything after 98, it's tough to look at the careers of those players after they left Chicago and say the Bulls were wrong. I'd say they were right on the money on Dennis Rodman. They'd gotten almost every ounce of basketball out of him. Played only 35 more NBA games. Jordan's still a good player once he came back, but not the same as he was when he was here. You couldn't have expected him to be the same in 01 or 02 as a Washington Wizard. There's no way he was getting in his late 30s. That's just not going to happen. I don't think there's a right or wrong here. I think it's a matter of opinion, what you favor. So I won't fault the Bulls for that, but I will fault them for the prickly nature of so many high-ranking employees. And a texter points out the way it ended for Carlton Fisk, and that's a great example of taking him to Cleveland and then not letting him in the clubhouse. Fisk is – did you know this story, Danny? Carlton
Refresh
Fisk,
my memory.
Hall of Famer, is released by his team, the Chicago White Sox, at then Jacobs Field, and he doesn't have a way to get into the locker room to say goodbye to his teammates, so he bought a ticket and went out in the bleachers.
Mac, I gotta stop you. It wasn't even Jacobs Field at that time, to make it even worse.
Oh, it was still Municipal Stadium?
Yeah, not even the comforts of a new stadium.
So he goes out to the outfield, right, and during batting practice was yelling to get their attention to say goodbye to his teammates.
Jesus.
He bought a ticket. That's Jerry Reinsdorf. That's what the White Sox and Bulls do.
Well,
that's
then
wild,
game one of that 93 ALCS tries to go see the team again and turned away, right, as the story goes?
No wonder he wound up in a field with an empty handle of vodka next to him.
But it's so interesting
him to drinking.
Because if you were his guy, right, like, you're Harold Baines, John Paxson, like, you're his guy forever.
Exactly.
God.
Exactly. Not everybody fits. Not everybody gets to be his guy. Not everybody gets to be Kenny Williams, a career 218 hitter.
What a wild story. Like, because undeniably successful, right? 7 titles between 2 teams. But just regardless of that accomplishment,
yeah.
It's like you were talking about with McCaskey. Ran the Bears when the 85 Bears won a Super Bowl. Not beloved.
Mm.
Jerry Reinsdorf, 7 titles. Jerry Krause, 6 titles. Not beloved. It's hard to do.
Yeah, it is. I guess it's easier than we think about for an owner to do unpopular things. But on the Reinsdorf ledger, also worth noting, the strike of 94, which
that's
he
a
had
one.
A huge voice in. Even before that, many people put off in 1988 in late June when he held the state of Illinois hostage and threatened to move the team to St. Petersburg. And at the 11th hour downstate, Senator William Maravitz passed the Illinois Sports Facility Authority Act, or whatever they called that, which wound up making money for the state, but a lot of people don't believe it was the right way to go about it. There have been other the white flag trade of the late 90s. Yeah, he's done a lot to endear himself to White Sox fans as well as Bulls fans while winning some championships along the way.
Quite a few. There's a there's an update on baseball's path or lack thereof to return that I want to get to, and a great Chicago hypothetical was posed by Bob Costas on this station today. We should play that as well. It's Mac and Parkins on the Score.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Stockton, left side. Hornacek screens across. Malone to the post. Malone stripped by Michael. To the four, stolen by MJ. Michael a steal. 16 seconds left. Bulls down one. Michael against Russell. 12 seconds. 11. 10. Jordan a drive. Hang. Fires. Yes! Scores! He scores! The Bulls lead 87-86 with 5:02 left. And now they're one stop away. Oh, my goodness.
He's unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness.
The final shot of Michael Jordan's career as a Chicago Bull. The audio brought to you by DuckDuckGo. Privacy. Want the same internet but more privacy? DuckDuckGo's got you covered. They help millions of people like you get privacy online without any trade-offs. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers all for free. DuckDuckGo. Privacy simplified.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Was that really the last shot of Jordan's career, or was that the last shot of Bob Cousy's career? Man, the audio of Neil Funk there sounded like it was recorded more than 22 years ago. That was classic. I liked the feel of it. It made me, like, everybody's huddled around the old Philco to listen to the Bulls games on radio because they didn't have enough money for a little 19-inch Philco black and white. That's classic. I love
yeah,
that.
That's a different type of nostalgia. That this is
yes.
Right?
Left side. Hornacek screens across. Malone to the post. Malone stripped by Michael. To the four, stolen by MJ. Michael a steal. 16 seconds left. Bulls down one. Michael against Russell. 12 seconds. 11. 10. Jordan a drive. Hang. Fires. Yes!
Yeah, that's
the Globetrotters. That was Meadowlark Lemon's last shot. The late Curly Neal, who also got eulogized this year since we've been in scoring.
My team.
Wicker baskets, James Naismith himself. Oh, man.
You know, they used to have a jump ball after every bucket. Danny, did you know that?
Yeah, I did know that. Yeah. That was The game's better now, Mac.
You think?
They've improved some of the rules.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's how it ends as a Bull. But Bob Costas, who had the call for that, obviously, on TV and was featured prominently in The Last Dance, he was on with Mully and Haw today. And he talked about the context of that being the perfect ending with relation to, maybe they should have brought him back for one more.
I wouldn't flatly say they were done. They still would have been a serious championship contender. And you have to respect Michael's feelings about it because he's the guy at the heart of the whole thing. But my feeling is that the legend of that Bulls team and of Michael Jordan are actually enhanced by the way it ended. Even if they'd won a seventh title, could you get a scenario as great, as theatrical, as the way Game 6 of Championship Number 6 ended? And the very fact that you have a little bit of a what might have been aspect, that adds a layer of texture to the story. Now, let's say they had come back in 1999. That was a lockout season. They only played half a season. With no disrespect to the San Antonio Spurs, that was the first of several championships they would win. So in that sense, it's significant. But that was a fairly forgettable championship, not just because they played the eighth-seeded Knicks, who seemed to have gotten there on a fluke, but the whole season had a feeling maybe a bit like what a half season of baseball will feel like this year, except that there were fans in the stands. So who's to say what might have happened in a half season like that? And then if they're around in 2000, they run into Shaq and Kobe just beginning their run of three. At some point, I don't care if they won nine in a row, at some point, the last image would have been Michael Jordan walking off the court in defeat. If they kept coming back to defend it, at some point they would have lost in the finals or in the playoffs or somewhere along the line. Is that as good an image as the last shot in Salt Lake City? And I'm aware that Michael comes back 3 years later and plays for the Wizards. But that's a footnote. In the imagination, in the public imagination, it ended with The Last Dance. And I don't think anything that could have happened subsequently would have elevated it very much, if at all.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with him. And I think that the LeBron v. Jordan debate is fun for water coolers and barbershops and national television, but ultimately pointless. Different players, different eras, different game. There always has to be a best of a generation, and those two guys are the best of their respective ones, so it's kind of a pointless exercise. But when people talk about LeBron, they say, well, he's 3-6 in the finals, and they hold that losing record in the biggest stage against him, ignoring the fact that he's won as an underdog in the finals when he came back down 3-1 against the Warriors, and then he lost once as a favorite to that Mavericks team when J.J. Barea embarrassed him in 2011. But for the rest of those finals, he played to his seed. Like, he was always the underdog. He was taking, like, undermanned Anderson Varejao and Wally Szczerbiak to the finals and then running up against, you know, Tim Duncan and the Spurs team. So it was like it was never a fair fight. He never lost a finals other than one that he should have won. He never won a finals other than one that he should have lost. And I always thought it was weird. Like, would you have rather LeBron lost earlier in the playoffs than make it to the finals and lost? Whereas Jordan lost in the playoffs to the Magic, but that's not counted against him in that all-time discussion because he just lost earlier in the playoffs. He lost to the Pistons in the East. He lost to the Magic in the East, but once he got to the finals, he never lost. So what would have been better for Jordan's legacy? Seven titles with one loss, and you can't have that undefeated mark, but he has the extra championship? Or how it went when he goes 6-0 and you can say he never lost when the title was on the line.
Yeah, Costas looks at it in terms of the indelibly left image in your brain, and you don't have one of Jordan tasting defeat. But let me ask you this, because I was thinking about it as listening to Bob. When I close my eyes, and you do the same exercise if you feel compelled, but close your eyes, and you know I want you to think of the first image that comes to your mind when I say LeBron James. Is it LeBron James losing an NBA Finals? Is that the first thing you thought of? I think of LeBron James thundering to the basket and posterizing somebody.
Yeah, I think of the block, honestly, in that Game 7 comeback, the Iguodala and the Warriors series. Because I still say that's the most impressive thing I've ever seen on a basketball court. It was the record-setting Warriors team, and he led both teams in points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks for an NBA Finals series. Both teams, all five statistical categories, led in all of them. Both teams came back from down 3-1. So, no, it's not a low moment for LeBron. It's a high moment. It's winning the title for Cleveland.
Yeah, getting to the championship series, the Super Bowl, the World Series, those are remarkable accomplishments, win or lose. We share the same feeling on Marv Levy's Buffalo Bills. They may have not won a Super Bowl, but when you win four consecutive AFC title games, that's not to be poo-pooed. That's to be respected and admired forever. That's an enormous accomplishment. They stayed motivated to keep grinding after failing three straight times and get to a fourth. 6-0 versus 6-1, boy, oh boy. I have a tough time thinking that would have sullied the image we have of Jordan, and people may want to count it against him because it proved he's human. Yeah, and I think that's a good part of it. I think, you know, humanizing an athlete is okay. I think that's part of why I eat the pizza. It humanizes Michael Jordan more than I've ever.
All by myself, nobody else eats. Eat the pizza.
I've never heard him more normal than that sentence. I eat the pizza.
All by myself.
Losing. I mean, we all lose, right? None of us ever played pro ball. No one on this show.
Not even close, believe it or not.
No.
I do think, though, that if he would have been 6-1 instead of 6-0, so it's an extra Eastern Conference championship, so undeniably his playoff record is better, I do think the legacy is lessened. I do. It's not logical. It's not right. But I absolutely think that if he would have – if they beat the Magic, they go to the NBA Finals, and Olajuwon beats him, right, in the 94 season, 94-95.
My want is always to make cross-sport comparisons. Do we hold it against Tom Brady that he lost a couple of Super Bowls to the New York Giants?
No, we don't. But I'm saying I think the greatest of all time basketball debate is different than any other sport.
Yeah, you might be right.
Just because the individual player, because it's just one of five on the court, it's – right, it's Bird Celtics, it's Magic's Lakers, it's Jordan's Bulls, it's LeBron's Cavs, whatever, you know? Like, that's just kind of how it works. And so I think, like, when you do that stuff, it's how many titles do you have? How many MVPs do you have? How many finals MVPs do you have? And then everything else falls in behind that. First team All-NBA, All-Star game appearances, where are you on the scoring list? But, like, the three things that people use are rings, finals MVPs, regular season MVPs. And if Jordan would have lost in the finals, I think it makes it a little bit less special than 6-0. Not to me, by the way, but I think in that conversation, I think it would be held against him a little bit. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're probably right. Does it mean anything for all of Michael's honors that he earned defensively?
I think Jordan should. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, Michael Jordan, as a two-way player, as an all-around player, I mean, was absolutely ridiculous. I'm going to pull it up right now so that I have the exact numbers. But he was Defensive Player of the Year once.
Right.
But first team All-NBA defense 9 times.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. First team.
Yeah. First team. Top 5 defender in the league 5 times. So, yeah, he was great at that side of the ball as an all-around player. So, yeah, that absolutely should be favored. But I'm just telling you, and call it, you know, the first take, Stephen A. Smith, you know, that level of sports commentary. It's not the end-all and be-all, but it's the loudest. It's the thing that gets cited the most. It's It's championships, it's finals MVPs, it's regular season MVPs, and it's did you lose? Did you lose in the big moments? Like, that's it's held against LeBron. It just it always has been. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's always been something that's held against LeBron. I'll give you the baseball update before we pass the baton to Joe Ostrowski coming up on the Score.
Station.
Happy 75th birthday to a Mount Rushmore classic rocker, Pete Townshend, the genius behind The Who, celebrating a birthday. So many great records, so many great songs as a writer, guitarist, vocalist, a producer, and a guy who brought the best out of his bandmates. He was a facilitator in so many ways. That's basically how Len Casper described him earlier. When Len offered a rebuttal to commentary previously on the McNeil and Parkin show about Pete Townshend as he celebrates birthday number 75.
Who else is on that Mount Rushmore for you?
Oh, I think you'd have to put Paul and George on it, wouldn't you? I'm sorry, Paul and John. That'd be McCartney and Lennon.
Thank you. I know I'm on first name basis too, but I just figured, you know, for those who aren't as accustomed, you might be willing to go first and last.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's again, it's all a matter of opinion and what you did. The influence, though, I mean, what Townshend did in bringing out the best of his bandmates really was, I thought, unique. He gave all of his bandmates an opportunity to shine, and Keith Moon became a signature drummer, a lead drummer, if you will, as John Entwistle did on bass guitar as well. If you love the bass guitar, listen to The Real Me at 11 and tell me you don't love that. And it's tremendous. And I was late to the party, unfortunately. I like The Who, but I never wound up, for some reason, buying a ticket to see them perform until very, very recently being, I think, 5-6 years ago, the first time I ever saw The Who play. Far too late, missing out on Entwistle and Moon. But Pete Townshend can play guitar, and his solo work I absolutely adore as well. His Empty Glass album from 1980, one of my favorites.
We didn't get to this during the show, and I'm just kind of catching up on some of it during the break, but there's apparently a 67-page document that outlines all of the safety protocols and proposals for Major League Baseball. ESPN has it, TJ Quinn doing some of the reporting. It includes some wild things, like players will have to be social distanced from each other. They'll sit in the stands apart from each other. They won't be able to interact within the dugout. Recommendation for no spitting. Can't take Ubers or taxis to the games. Recommendations for no showering at the stadium afterwards, to wait till you get back to your home or hotel to do that in like a one-on-one situation. So those are the safety precautions that Major League Baseball is trying to implement as they thread this needle. And then they got the financial thing on the other side. John Heyman reporting, in recent talks, two options were given to the union. One, you can negotiate a new financial arrangement, something other than that prorated pay for players for no games in attendance, which the players thought that they had already agreed to. Like, hey, instead of 162 games, if we play 82 games, you just give us that salary prorated. Owners say no, without fans in the stands, we can't pay you that prorated salary. So one, negotiate a new deal, or two, wait until the coronavirus is in the clear to the point where fans can attend games. So the players union apparently is against revenue sharing. They see it as a form of a salary cap and a bad precedent ahead of their CBA expiring after the 2021 season. So again, this is public posturing, and hopefully they work out an agreement here and this doesn't turn into millionaires and billionaires not playing baseball because of money in the midst of a pandemic. But if those are the two options, I think the players are going to dig their heels in pretty firmly here.
I won't quarrel with them since they're the ones taking the risks. I know in the court of public opinion, if they are perceived right, or it's not going to matter of right or wrong. If they're perceived to be greedy, they're going to get lambasted for it, and I won't be among those doing it. If they have the conviction that this isn't right for them, I will support them 100% if they choose not to participate because of safety reasons or they don't like the agreement. I mean, the owners probably feel like they got a lot of these young guys over a barrel right now, that the guys who haven't earned Chris Bryant-type money. And maybe they do to some degree. You know, everybody's got his price. It's, you know, everyone's got their breaking points, too. But I won't be critical. And, I'm trying to determine if I have the stamina to read a 67-page health report that baseball is presenting. I probably could do it. I don't suspect a high percentage of the ballplayers themselves actually would want to plow through 67 pages. My guess would be...
very readable book.
Very readable book. Yeah. Probably no technical jargon in there at all about the transmission of viruses or anything like that.
That'll do it.
Written for the layman.
Yeah, not... we'll see. I will read the ESPN write-up of it more in its entirety, but that is... I think even if you don't read it, just the fact that there's something that's 67 pages speaks to how complicated this is going to be.
Right?
Whether you read it or not. This is not going to be very easy, to say the least. Fun show. Mac found Michael Jordan's poem. If you want to check that out.
Yeah, thanks to all the Jordan impersonators, too.
I know. I know. It was ringing off the hook. We should have done more. We can do more tomorrow.
I did that poem, but we didn't give it another thought.
I loved the poem. I loved the swing. I hope it's the open tomorrow. Stretch it out, Max. Stretch out that content. Oh, bring it into Wednesday, okay? We'll bring it into Wednesday to eat the pizza. Good Carmen Electra line, too. Let's see here. What else did we have? Antoine Walker was on the show.
Antoine Walker was today, yeah. We had a good time with Antoine Walker at 3 o'clock, and Hub Arkish was with us at 4.
And Matt Abatacola.
Jinx on you, yeah, 4:45.
Happy 25th score anniversary to our friend and teammate, Dan Bernstein. Thank you to Herb Lawrence, who helped us out back in the studio. We appreciate it. Nick Shepkowski is our executive producer. Thank you, sir. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. For Dan McNeil, I'm Danny Parkins. Joe Ostrowski coming up next. This is The Score. That was awesome and emotional and conflicting and nostalgic and some damn good television.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.